Mike Tyson once said something that I believe is incredibly spot on. He said that everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. Now, as we finalize our goals for the new year, there's a part of our goal setting, a part of the action plan that a lot of people just completely miss. And it's that plan for those moments when you could get punched in the mouth. What do you do? How do you avoid it? We're going to go there today. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 25,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so before we dig in, I want to let you know that this week's episode of the Sales Playbook Podcast is brought to you by my brand spanking new 2020 one-on-one coaching program. We're going to talk about it a little bit later in the podcast, but if you're impatient like me and you'd like to go check it out for yourself, please visit yoursalesplaybook.com/coaching. So you guys know how I like to roll. And by now you should know that it is a major pet peeve of mine when I listen to a podcast and they're taking 6 and 7 and 8 minutes telling me about what the F they're going to talk about in that. Let's just get down to business. So you can write it off as, well, he's a typical New Yorker just trying to get down to business. Or you can look at it like a little bit respectful of your time. So a quick recap of what we've been talking about lately, this is what we've been talking about. And no, I will not edit that out. Lately, we've been talking about the things that people tend to forget to include in their goal setting. And the way I tried to approach the last few weeks of the podcast was putting myself in your shoes. Isn't that what we're supposed to be doing as sales professionals? Put ourselves in the other person's shoes. And one thing, if I were in your shoes, I would be so sick and tired this time of year of all these posts out there about how you should be setting SMART goals. And it's just, okay, enough already. We get it. Could you teach us some new shit? So that's what I've been trying to do, ladies and gentlemen, teach you some new shit. So a quick recap of what we covered in the last few weeks. First of all, we talked about, hey, don't wait until the first week in January, and more likely the second week in January, because you know, you're hungover, and God forbid you get going on the first or even the second. The second this year is going to be on a Thursday. That would be asinine to get going on your goals then. So, let's just put it off a little longer and get going on that Monday. So, we talked about getting going now. Now, that was probably almost a month ago that I was saying, hey, get going now. Just break that whole belief that we've had, our entire lives, that you have to get going in January. Get going now. So that's the first thing. And yeah, even though it was a month ago, I'm recording this right now on December 15th. Imagine if you got going today. Seriously, it's damn near a month earlier than you probably would have. So that's the first thing that we talked about. The next thing that we talked about was for you to take an honest look in the mirror. Ask your ego to leave the room, take a look at yourself, and especially assessing your skills that you're going to need to be able to kick ass in the new year. Flag areas that you're going to need to improve upon. So that was one of the things we talked about. We had an entire episode dedicated to that. Next, and I believe this was last week, we talked about creating a plan that is not only activity driven, because a lot of goals are more a goal and not a plan. For example, And again, maybe this is getting into that smart goal shit that I said I wasn't going to do. But for example, people say, well, I want to make President's Club next year, or I want to sell X amount next year, whatever it is. Okay, great. What is the specific plan that you're going to have? And one of the things that we talked about last week is that you really have to become obsessed with three things if you want success in sales. And this may vary a little bit for you, depending on your role, but for the most part, we refer to this. And when I say we, that's basically me, because I am a one-man army here at Castain Training Systems. I refer to it as the three drivers, or the three sales drivers. Number one, getting new accounts, right? You'd call it new account acquisition for the fancy schmancy people listening. That is driver number one, getting new accounts, getting that new business. Number two, retaining / wowing that business, because you can't have it going out the back door just as fast as going in the front door, man. You're not going to, it's like you're running on a damn treadmill. It's not going to work. And then last but not least, growing that business. So everything that you're doing in sales, again, depending on your role, should be on getting an account, keeping and wowing that account, and growing that account. Today, I want to talk about the part where most people are completely unprepared. I really believe that something happens this time of year to a lot of people. And it's going to sound like, okay, Castain is a pessimist. I never would have suspected it. Here he is. He's a sales trainer. He should be Mr. Positive Thinking. And I don't want it to come across that way. When it comes to the holidays, folks, the holidays are really, really special to me. I love the holidays. I am that idiot in October who's wondering if he could get away with playing Christmas music. I mean, every single year I decorate this pathetic little Charlie Brown type of tree in the world headquarters of Castain Training Systems, which is the upstairs of my home, by the way. But it sounds better, world headquarters, doesn't it? And I am into it. Throughout the day, I'm playing holiday music. And not only playing holiday music, I have a full confession. I really enjoy, because I don't have to deal with HR and having a lot of coworkers here that are going to get offended. I thoroughly enjoy changing the lyrics to Christmas and holiday standards into completely inappropriate things. So, which is something that if I ever go back into corporate America and work for somebody else, that I'm probably going to be down in HR every single day getting complaints about me. I'm going to have to work on it. But so I'm all into it. I am also really into this whole concept of the new year and starting fresh. But I think a lot of people go into the year with all like feeling so good because we've recharged, right? And there's something about the holidays that goes back to when we were little kids and the lights and the family and the warmth. And there's something about the new year and starting over and everything that we latch on to too much to the positive thinking and not enough into having a plan. And even that what if thing, hey, what if the plan doesn't work, or what could be the things that get in the way of things? So what happens is we come out of the gate feeling all good and positive, and we really are almost, you know, thinking that from the rest of the year it's going to be nothing but good and nothing but positive and peace on earth and goodwill to men and women and all that kind of thing. And what happens is what? That piss and vinegar lasts about 2 weeks, and we get that punch. And I really want to talk about that quote that Mike Tyson had said. And one of the things that he said was, and again, forgive me if I'm misquoting it. And if you want to correct me, don't, because I don't give a shit. It's still going to be the same gist. Mike Tyson said something along the lines of, well, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And there's different quotes out there that he said, until they get hit, until they get punched in the face. Okay, whatever. Potato freaking potato. But I was reading an interview that he did in 2012, where they asked him about that quote, because this was a fight that he had coming up, and they were saying to him, well, listen, are you prepared for this? This person has, and it might have been the Evander Holyfield fight. I don't remember what the fight was. And they were asking him, hey, you know, this person, you know, they have this ability, they have speed, and they have this, and they have that, and, you know, they have a plan and everything. And that's when he turned around and said, well, you know, listen, everybody has a plan until basically they get hit. But see, there's another part of, I don't know if it was a part of the original quote, but in this interview, he tagged something else on, which I thought was kind of interesting. He said something along the lines of, everyone has a plan until they get hit. Then, like a rat, they stop in fear and freeze. Now, yes, it's a tad harsh. And remember, this language and this type of narrative is for the fighting arena. But I really think in many ways it applies to us, because what happens is we come out and it's almost like our guard is down because we're coming off the holidays and feeling good and feeling recharged. And then all of a sudden we get hit in the face. We get punched in the mouth. And we really haven't thought about, okay, what do I do when that happens? And I like to go from that place where I'm thinking, okay, listen, in an ideal world, I'm never going to get hit. I'm going to come out there and I'm going to be doing the punching. But I am going to be getting hit. I am going to have parts of my plans that are going to fail. That is just the way it is. I am going to have days when I'm not on my game, and I am going to have things that represent me not being the best version of Paul Castain. So what am I going to do? How am I going to identify those things when they happen? How do I avoid them? When I realize that, I'm knee-deep in something that's kind of punching me in the face, how do I get out of that? How do I get out of the corner there and maybe turn it around and go on the offensive instead of the defensive? So today, I want to talk about that a little bit and just give you a few of the things that you should be thinking about that could represent just a not only a punch in the face, but if you continue to get punched in the face in this manner, really a knockout punch for you. And I want you to understand going into this today that there's a lot more to this. Generally, there used to be a webinar that I would do every January where we took a deep dive into these areas. And if I do it again this January, I'll certainly let you guys know, but we'll take a deeper dive there. But today, because it's a podcast, we don't have that kind of time to dive into this. There's even more beyond the categories that I'm going to give you. So let's get into it. The very first thing, and by the way, don't you dare, nobody is allowed right now to say duh, or yeah, I know that, or good reminder, Castain. No, F that. And by the way, I almost actually said the F curse again. It's going to happen on this podcast, I'm telling you. And when it happens, I'm not going to make it a regular habit, but it's going to happen because I talk that way. So and give me credit, because this year, this upcoming year, 2020, will be the 10th year anniversary of the Sales Playbook podcast, and I have never dropped an F-bomb, but it is going to happen. It's inevitable. So anyway, the very first thing that I want you to think about that could be just a severe punch in the face, if not a knockout punch for you, is, you know, what are you going to do about negativity and negative people? And first of all, the thing I wanted to say, which I thought is, and I'm not saying it's interesting because it's my phrase, because it's not, it's actually something Tony Robbins talks about. And he talks about how so much of success has to do with psychology. And mostly your psychology, how you talk to yourself, how you interpret things, that kind of, you know, that kind of psychology is what we're talking about. So what we want to do is think about your psychology and negativity and how you can avoid it. So the very first thing that I do, I'm very proactive about negativity. And I'll tell you why. I interviewed somebody for a best practices study a few years ago, a guy in the printing industry. And he was saying something very interesting. Well, first of all, he was talking about his success. And what I really wanted to get into is if there was a time when he just wasn't hitting his goal and he was failing. And, you know, what was the thing that he did that turned things around? And he said it without hesitation. It was immediately came to him. He said, I was way too negative. And what was very interesting that he said, he goes, I actually enjoyed being negative. I enjoyed the gossip. I enjoyed going out and commiserating with my coworkers. And once he stopped doing that, because, oh, and by the way, what would happen was, what happens when you go out and you're negative with people? You go out to a lunch and that little 30-minute thing is now an hour, hour and a half. Do you really feel like going back after lunch and ripping bumpers off of cars and conquering the world and getting out there and preaching about your company and everything? No, you don't. You're done. You're pissed. You're not in a great frame of mind. So he had to change that. So I want you to think about your own negativity and just your own mindset. One of the things that I stopped doing years ago, and when I say years ago, it is probably getting up on 12 years now, I stopped listening and watching the news in the morning. I can't live life in a bubble, by the way, and I'm not saying that you do either. And I'm not saying we shield ourselves from the harsh reality. But one thing I found in the morning, my morning ritual was, I always listened to the news in the car when I was traveling to work and my commute. I would, in the morning, even before that, I had the news on the TV in the background. And the thing that I realized about the news, call me Captain Obvious here, but they make money on being really effing negative. And I realized, I mean, and if you think I'm kidding, just one time listen to the news or watch the news and just like keep a little tally of how many murders they talk to you about and how many countries are on the verge of kicking the shit out of another country and have their panties in a bunch and how this person is suing this person and how these poor people are getting harassed and everything. And yes, I care about these things. But to me, it tears away at the body armor that we need to go out there each and every day when we do battle. So what I do instead is I don't do that in the morning. What I do is I go to my homepage and I just check the news and I scan it very, very quickly. I see a bunch of shit about murders and all this other stuff. I'm not reading it. What I'm doing is I'm going into the things that I really, really need to know. And I'll tell you what, you don't realize sometimes how much these things impact you until you accidentally go back to your old ways and then you realize what an effect it has on you. Just before this podcast, I went on Facebook and I subscribe. I don't know if you guys have them out by you, but out here on Long Island, we have this thing called The Patch. And there's these local editions of it. For example, I'm not too far from Deer Park, Long Island. So I subscribe to the Deer Park Patch. And it shows you different news items that are going on. And right there is a video of a fight on the LIRR, which is the Long Island Railroad. And I'm like, you know, oh, wow, you know, like almost like, you know, that idiot that has to look at an accident when they pass it. I'm clicking on it and I'm watching people kick the shit out of each other. And then I'm just feeling all riled up and I'm wondering why. See, that's not going to help you. That's not going to help you go out there and deal with rejection and all that kind of stuff. So that's one of the things you might want to work on. The other thing that you're going to have to think about is you're going to have to think about negativity in other forms, like your coworkers. How about the negativity when it comes to losing a deal? How about, forgive me, or not, because I don't know why I would possibly apologize to you for bad language when you know what you're getting into here, but how about the assholes that you're going to come across, or the doubters, or the critics? Very quick thing about assholes. I mean, we deal with them a lot. The problem to me is when we dwell on the assholes, or when encountering an asshole makes us second guess what we're doing, instead of realizing that, no, there really is no message here. There's no, I need to change my style. This is in fact an asshole. And the amount of time that we spend thinking about assholes, I heard somebody, and I think it was, I'm going to mispronounce the guy's name. What is it, like Noah Kagan or something like that? I think he's the guy with Sumo App or whatever it was. I heard him being interviewed. It had to be 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 years ago. And he was talking pretty much about what I just mentioned there. And he was saying it's amazing because he had written a book or whatever. And he said you could have 99 ratings on Amazon that say you are the God, you are God's gift, that was awesome, you changed my life, but you never dwell on that. It's the one asshole. And when you think about how much time that cost you and how much energy and even how that wears away at the body armor when you spend a lot of time there, well, to me that's a real severe punch in the face, right? So now that brings us to the next thing. The next area where you could get a punch in the face is your own fear and doubt. And again, I'm going to go back to Tony Robbins on this, and I loved what he had to say. And actually, you know what? Let me hold off on the Tony Robbins thing. And let me tell you about something where I was speaking to someone who does a lot of mixed martial arts fighting and competes down in Atlantic City. And this is a story I've told many times on this podcast. For a very short period of time, I studied martial arts. Not enough to say I studied martial arts. I just like to say that because it makes me feel like a badass when I say it. When I say studied martial arts, it might have been months, ladies and gentlemen. But so anyway, my kids, though, they were studying Kenpo. And I was speaking with their instructor. And yeah, over time, we really developed a nice rapport. And I'm glad because I really don't want to piss off somebody with a seventh or eighth or a gazillionth degree black belt. And I asked him because I am naturally inquisitive, especially people that could kick the shit out of me. I said, I'm curious. I mean, you said you compete. I've seen some of these things and people get the shit kicked out of them. Do you get scared at all? I mean, do you get scared of what could happen to you or what you could do to someone else? And he thought for a minute. And he said, no, really, fear and being scared is not the right word, Paul. He said, I have a respect for it. He said, when I fear something, I'm paralyzed. And I think about, now let's do a quick timeout. Let's go back to the Mike Tyson quote, how when somebody gets punched in the face, they kind of freeze up like a rat. And what he was saying here is that, you know, instead of having the fear and freezing up, he has respect. I respect the fact that I could really hurt my opponent. I also respect the fact that they could really hurt me, and having that respect keeps either one of those things from happening. And I thought that was a very good outlook. And of course, me being a wise ass, I said, is that just another way of you saying you shit your pants? And he goes, no. And he was a good sport about it and didn't make an example of me. So that's one of the things I want you to think about. And now going back to the Tony Robbins thing, is he talks about using things as a counselor instead of a jailer. And I think fear, many times we can use it as a counselor, but too many times we use it as a jailer. So I want you to think about that. Also, too, I want to let you know that a lot of times with fear, and I don't want to play amateur Dr. Phil here, but I really believe this. When I look at my own life's experience, and I would invite you to look at yours, too, a lot of things when it comes to fear, to me, was based on an assumption that I made earlier in my life. Some of it was when I was in my early teens, and I'll share that with you in a minute. And some of it was a little bit later. So the stuff that was in my early teens, first of all, a lot of people don't realize this about me, but I really am an introvert. I'm actually more of an ambivert, where I have the tendencies of both extrovert and introvert, but I like to live more in the introvert part. When I was younger, I was that awkward kid in my early teens. A lot of the time I spent getting turned down by girls and you start to question yourself. People, I guess they just don't like me, you know, and when you're at that age, well, I guess I'm not good looking and I guess I'm not popular and whatever. And what happens is sometimes that old version of yourself creeps its face back into the picture. Now, for me, I had something very interesting happen to me. Also, too, I actually was also bullied on top of that. And I got my ass kicked and humiliated the better part of about 2 years. And I was very lucky, not for getting bullied and humiliated for that amount of time, but having a big brother who was a former Navy SEAL. And I went to him at that age. And I said, please, could you just teach me how to fight? Dad and mom, they're telling me to turn the other cheek. I'm getting knocked on my ass when I do that. They want no part of sending me for karate lessons or whatever. Can you help me? And he taught me how to fight. I worked out. I was very, very thin prior to that. When I came back to school, my senior year in high school, I had actually fought my bully over the summer and won. And I also had gained, in a good way, of about 20, 25 pounds in muscles. I was very, very built. I had just this tremendous amount of confidence. And that confidence then kind of set the story going forward to really changing my life, because I had that confidence. I met this girl in high school that maybe a year before that, I wouldn't have had the guts to ask her out. Because that old voice in my head, being the 13-year-old awkward kid, the kid who got bullied, the kid who thinks that, you know, he's basically shit, right? That he just is not really worthy of, you know, a beautiful young lady that I wanted to ask out. And I'm really glad I had the balls to ask her out, because she became Mrs. Castain, by the way. Yeah, I got married in 12th grade. How cool is that? No, I'm kidding. No, we dated for like 5 years, and now we're married 31 years. And it all goes back to that and so many other things. So sometimes that little voice in your head that's telling you you suck or you're not worthy of success or whatever, it holds you back. Did you know, again, I'm going to be mispronouncing the shit out of stuff this week, but who is that singer? What is it, Sarah Bareilles or whatever? It sounds like I'm mispronouncing it. And please don't correct me. I don't care. But you know what I'm talking about. And she put out this album. And I want to guess it was somewhere around maybe 2010 or whatever. And I think it was something along the lines of, it was called like The Little Voice or something like that. And the story behind that album was, which is very interesting, if you ever care to Google it. The reason why she decided to call it that is because everybody around her was saying, you need to do the album this way. You need to do the album that way. They were constantly correcting her and getting in the way of her artistic, you know, the whole creative process. And she just kept going back to the positive inner voice, that positive little voice that was saying, nah, do it this way. This is the right way to doing it. Because you know what happens when you have a lot of critics around you? You start to believe them. Seriously, when you have a lot of people criticizing you, you start to believe it. And sometimes you have to listen to that inner voice if it serves you. Other times, I think you have to tell that inner voice to go F off, that this version of the inner voice has to do when you were 13 and when you were awkward or whatever, or when, you know, when you were doing what I did and getting his ass kicked every day after school or whatever it is. It's not necessarily who you are right now. Or even if you are that way right now in your own version of that, it doesn't mean that you have to accept the script that life has given you. And by the way, I just feel like I just went down a whole motivational thing there, and that's not my thing, but I just think it's very, very important that we talk about this. Now, the other thing too, and it's actually closely related to fear and doubt, is procrastination. And they really refer to this as the silent killer, because we lose a lot more time to putting shit off than we would ever realize. Now, if you've been listening to me for a while, you know that one of my, and I haven't talked about this, I'm guessing it has to be at least a year, maybe it's 2 years, but one of my pet statistics that I always talk about on this podcast is this study on procrastination that was done by Dr. Piers Steele up in Canada. And what they found, by the way, it was a 10-year study on procrastination. Notice how I'm pausing there? I'm giving all the smartasses like me an opportunity. I'm handing you this on a platter. Don't let me down, Sales Playbook community. It was a 10-year study on procrastination. I know. Like, what, he put it off for 9.5 years? Like, what's up with that shit? But anyway, when he finally got around to doing the study, 2 weeks before the end of the 10 years, he found, and this should not shock you, that at the core of procrastination is this fear and a disbelief that we can complete the task. So a lot of procrastination has to do with fear and avoidance activities. So what I want you to do is, number one, I want you to think about, what are your avoidance activities? So what I mean by that, first of all, let me give you an example from my personal life. My wife loves to break my balls. I mean, I think that's part of, they might have been in the vows, quite frankly. I mean, I was so busy being smitten that I agreed to all kinds of shit. I don't know. I don't know what else. And it's years later. I mean, who knows what's going on? But anyway, she loves to break my balls about this. She says, I always know when you're avoiding something because I see you outside watering the lawn. And meanwhile, there's this incredible invention called the sprinkler. And it's really true. That, and I just find it a completely mindless, useless activity that I enjoy doing because I feel like I did something. But it just all goes to shit once she comes in and starts giving me a hard time about it. But we laugh about that, but we really do our own version of that in business. And we avoid things. Like, for example, you might be avoiding making cold calls. Now, I want to be very, very honest, and I want to say something that I might be the only sales trainer who has the balls to say this. I don't like cold calling. I don't. I do it because it's a necessary evil, but I really don't believe these people. It's, I love cold call. Yeah, I love getting my teeth pulled and you know, going and you know, getting colonoscopies, you know, and all that other shit. I don't like any of that stuff, but we have to do it. So what happens is that sometimes we have things, like our brain takes over, and it wants to keep you away from things that are uncomfortable. So it gives you these avoidance activities, like doing a lot of extra administrative stuff. Yeah, let me update everything in Salesforce. Yeah, instead of getting your ass kicked on the phone. I get it. Let's call clients instead of cold calling. Hey, chit-chatting with coworkers and stuff. How about spending time in the plant, which the technical term for that is dicking around in the plant, by the way, or the warehouse, or whatever it is that you call it. And you know, we're avoiding something. So you have to be conscious of that. And it was Zig Ziglar, by the way, the late Zig Ziglar, who referred to it as the silent killer because you never see it. Hey, I have a stat for you. Actually, you know what? I'm going to share the stat with you in a second. Because procrastination actually adds up in ways that you would never realize. I bet you have no idea. And I want you to think about this before I dive into it in a second. I want you to just ask yourself a quick question. How many days a year do you think the average person loses to procrastination? It's going to blow your mind when I tell you what it is. But anyway, the final thing that I'm going to talk about for now is managing your time. And this is another way that we can get punched in the face, or your plan could get punched in the face, because if you're not managing your time and you're not on top of it, you're not going to get to those action items. You're not going to get to the other action items that I talked to you about a few weeks ago when I said, hey, take an inventory of your skills, flag some areas for improvement, and get to work on those. Don't just work on the plan. Work on the skills you're going to need to kick the shit out of that plan. So let me throw a few things at you. First of all, the two biggest just challenges to everyone's time, and I could break down quote-unquote time management into this whole thing: interruptions and time wasters. I want you to think about your interruptions. By the way, the another Castain pet statistic coming at you. 3, 2, 1. The average person, according to a research firm out by me called Basics, loses 2.1 hours per day. So what I want you to realize, to interruptions, I don't mean like you're talking to somebody, they interrupt you. I mean, you're trying to get shit done, and it's either a coworker, it's your boss, it's you're trying to make outbound calls, and inbound calls are coming in, and it's not just the interruption itself, it's the loss of momentum. So I want to throw something at you. I said 2.1 hours a day. When I teach time management skills, one of the things I say to everyone is, I really want to challenge you, right? It would be great if we could all get rid of those 2.1 hours a day of interruptions. But I think that's unrealistic. But what if going into the new year, you said, you know what? I'm going to try to liberate back 30 to 60 minutes of interruptions a day where I'm going to stop them dead in their tracks and not allow them to happen. I want to tell you how that adds up. If you were able to liberate back, if you were able to stop 30 to 60 minutes of interruptions each and every day, you will, at by this time next year, you will have an extra 16 to 32 more selling days. Now, anybody listening to this that says, yeah, big deal, right? Like, who gives a shit about that? Well, you should, because right about now, some of you are struggling to make that year-end bonus or to finish up at that next tier or to make President's Club. Imagine if your boss came into you right now and said, hey, listen, great news, everybody. People in accounting, they're doing some creative accounting in there, which companies never do, right? Creative accounting. They said, we have an extra 16 to 32 days, right? You would be happy as hell to hear that news. Let me even take it a step further. What if your boss came into you right now and said, by the way, I have this bonus check for you for 16 to 32 days of your time. Happy holidays. Would you say, yeah, you need the money more than me, Skipper? Big spender, you take it. No, you'd run the hell out of there and cash. You'd probably moonwalk into the freaking bank. So I want to let you know that adds up. But now let's go back to that procrastination thing. The average person, this and this is something I want you to do. I almost just gave you the number that I'm about to talk about. Don't ever give somebody a number or a stat or a fact without citing the source. And here's why, folks. You ready? Because it will come across like you're full of shit. Seriously, I see this all the time. Studies have shown. What studies? It's science. What science? Are you making this up? So anyway, there's an organization called YouGov, and they did a study on procrastination. You ready? And I said to you before, try to think about how many days the average person loses to procrastination. It's 55 days a year that we lose because of procrastination. Now, when I hear something that is just that incredible, 55 days is pretty substantial, right? We're talking almost 2 months right there. I always say to myself, okay, the skeptic in me says, is that accurate? Well, what if YouGov is completely full of shit here and it's half of that? Well, half of 55 is still a lot of days we're losing to procrastination. The other thing I want to throw at you in terms of time management, it goes back to negativity and negative people. DDI did a study several years ago. I'm guessing it was about a decade ago. And they found that the average person complains about their boss 15 hours a month. Now, you might be saying, hey, I'm good. I'm like you, Paul. I work for myself, so I don't complain about myself or whatever. But here's what I think. If they were able to find in this study that the average person does a lot of complaining about their boss, is it safe to assume that in general, there is a lot of us that might be spending a good 15 hours a month in that whole negativity zone or taking a turn to negative town, as they said in Wedding Crashers? I want to let you know that 15 hours a month, well, that's 22 days a year that's getting lost. So far we've lost, it could be anywhere 16 to 32 days. Well, actually not lost, that we could liberate back if we get rid of some of those interruptions that we talked about. We said procrastination, 55 days a year. We said as far as negativity, 15 hours a month, 22 days a year. I want to throw another thing at you. What about your thoughts about Fridays and Mondays? There's a lot of sales reps who believe that, okay, after a certain time on Friday, I'm going to mentally check out, no more calls, and they're just, you know, long lunches. Yeah, I got a meeting at 3:00. The meeting is like with their wife back at their house, and it's crazy. But then they do the same shit on Monday morning because you can't call somebody first thing in the morning without first talking about your weekend with your coworkers and God forbid you want to talk business with a potential customer at 9:30 in the morning. Well, I want you to realize that if you're doing a half a day on Friday and you're doing a half a day on Monday, that's 8 hours, right? That is 8 hours a week, and giving you 2 weeks off a year for vacation, that's 50 days a year. But it's not that. It's not just that. How about the mental checkout that happens right around this time of year, right? I mean, for some of you, it's a month-long thing where you just, all right, you're hearing silver bells on the radio or something, or how about that shitty song about Christmas shoes where everybody feels horrible? Because, you know, I mean, it's terrible because the kid's mom is dying, like, just whole downer type of thing. And now I'm going to check out for the rest of the month. So that adds up. How about over the summertime? There's a lot of you guys that mentally check out over the summertime. Well, I got news for you. If you're mentally checking out damn near a month at the holidays, and just a quick timeout, because there's always the one wise ass in the group that says, all right, Ebenezer Castain, right? I mean, you know, okay, maybe you don't like the holidays. No. I love the holidays. And my whole thing is, it's holiday, not holla month. And I don't mind turning it into a holla week. But F this noise about, are you kidding me? 30 days you're going to check out? That is substantial. So you've got that at the holidays. But then over the summer, you've got January and all, January. Yeah, over the summer in January. What part of the world are you living in, Castain? No, over the summer, you have July and August. A lot of people are checking out. So if you add that together, man, you've got 25% of your year right there. So you need to think about that and your attitude toward anytime there's a three-day weekend. Is it a three-day weekend for you, or is it more a few days before, a few days after? We just came off of Thanksgiving here in the U.S. Well, that's a four-day weekend here. Well, was it a four-day weekend, or was it more like a 7 to 10 day slack fest? Because, you know, you can't really talk business a few days before. It's great to do like administrative shit. And then, well, the day after a holiday weekend, you can't just jump right back into business. Next thing you know, you're losing a week, you're losing a month, you're losing, you know, it just adds up. So you need to think about that. But now, last but not least, I also want you to think about your plan itself. I want you to think about the plan that you're going into the new year with and your ability to modify that plan when you get punched in the face. I don't mean abandon it, but I'm also talking about not being stubborn and saying, no, that's it. I am determined to win. Well, part of being determined to win is knowing when you need to adapt and modify and even pivot. So I want you to think about that. So there's obviously more to this, but what I want you to think about is, number one, really, what are the things that could, quote unquote, punch you in the mouth next year? But more importantly, I want you to think about, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do when you're in a negative frame of mind? How are you going to interrupt that pattern? What are you going to do when you're hanging out with a coworker that's bringing you down and talking about how much the comp plan sucks and everything else, or wants to go and commiserate over? How are you going to handle that? What are you going to do with all those interruptions that you have? How are you going to manage that? What are you going to do when you find yourself procrastinating? How are you going to get yourself back in the game, so to speak? How are you going to manage your time better? So there's a lot of thinking that I want you to do about this, but remember, it isn't all about saying, okay, here's my goal for the new year. It's about some of these other things that we talked about. What are the skills? Getting going on it now instead of waiting until January. It's coming up with the plan. It's also coming up with the other part of the plan, the things that punch the plan in the face, that punch you in the face. What are you going to do about it? So anyway, that's what you have for me this week, folks. It's too late now to get your money back. Sorry. We're already 41 minutes into this. I want to leave you with something. As you finalize your goals for the new year, I want you maybe to consider having a coach. Now, one of the many reasons why you might want to consider a coach, somebody said this to me the other day, and I hope you're doing this too with your potential clients. Sometimes you hear things from them and you say, oh my gosh, man, I've been around this for so long. I never thought about that as a selling point for my widget. Well, somebody said something to me, and I just never thought about this. I'm almost ashamed to admit this. And they said, Paul, one of the reasons why I'm considering hiring a coach is that I need someone other than my boss, someone outside of the organization, to give me some honest feedback. So that's something that I want you to think about. Now, what I'd like for you to do, I have an offer for you if you're interested. I'd like to give you a free 30-minute strategy session. Now, during this strategy session, now notice I said strategy session. I didn't say infomercial where I'm going to trick you into 30 minutes of beating you over the head with my sales coaching program. No, here's what we're going to do during that time, during the 30 minutes. Number one, we're going to look at the challenges that you have. But, you know, life isn't just about looking at challenges. I also want to look at and discuss with you the opportunities that you have. I want to talk about also how we might work together. If this is something that's of interest to you, I want you to do two things. I don't want you just to go ahead and reach out to me for the free strategy session. What I'd like you to do is first go to my coaching page, because I'm not for everybody. My style and my fees might not be for you. So what I'd like for you to do is first go to yoursalesplaybook.com/coaching. yoursalesplaybook.com/coaching. If you're cool with my style and you're cool with the fees, then I want you to send me an email, paul@yoursalesplaybook.com. paul@yoursalesplaybook.com, and we could set up a free strategy session for you. With that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production.